It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 462. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free at www.instanthousecall.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at MikeTechShow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. Send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/miketechshow. And we have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all of the past shows, links to the audio and the show notes. Great resource for everything and all things Mike Tech Show related. Hope everybody's doing well tonight. And I want to start things off with a couple stories. The first, a final word on the encrypted email. I was able to go live in production on Tuesday evening this week with the Smarsh service that I've talked about a couple times and one of my clients. It's very simple. If you have an Exchange server, it's just installing a send connector within your transport hub configuration on Exchange. And they give you the detailed information on how to configure that. Tech support was wonderful in helping me with testing. And once I got that connector established, I needed to be on a workstation that was an approved sender of encrypted email. And I sent first messages that are not encrypted, making sure they're passing through. So I sent a couple of them to some of my email accounts. They work great. Then I sent a couple with the trigger word in the subject, which is the word encrypt or the word secure as the first word in the subject line. Now, that message goes through that service. They are scanning for that word. When it's seen, whatever script they have or their process takes that email, puts it on the portal, and then takes the recipient's email address and sends that recipient a message describing to that recipient how they can log in and get the encrypted email that's waiting for them. It's a very simple process, and it works perfectly. I also discovered this week with talking to the techs, I needed information how someone that is using Google as their email, they don't have their own hosted email server. Well, how do you set up that connector? It works with Google Apps. And they have configuration instructions that I received on how to do that within Gmail and Google Apps. So now clients that have Google Apps could also take advantage of an encrypted email service. This is important as compliance. You can't avoid it. As certain clients that you have may fall under the umbrella of certain compliances that you've heard me talk about, whether it be HIPAA for the medical industry, FINRA, financial, SOX in the big corporate world, Sarbanes-Oxley, PCI, credit card, all of these different compliances. Some of them require you to be sending encrypted email now. That's why it's very important to get on board with services that can provide that for your clients, or maybe it's your own company. A client that I have probably got like maybe a month or two ago, all of a sudden I get a warning they're running out of hard disk space. A utility that I haven't talked about in a little while, but this utility has saved me on numerous occasions, and the link will be in the show notes, and that is Tree Size Free. Tree Size is a little utility, and I'm even going to have a link. I didn't know they had a portable version. I was searching around. They have a portable version. I quickly downloaded that, ran it where it told me where the space was being taken up. The C partition of this server, and of course it's Small Business Server 2003, the C partition was 30 gig, which actually is a lot for back then. And I seen it was only 500 meg free. And I discovered 12 gig was being taken up by this database that they have. They have a program running that's a vertical application just for their industry. And there's an automatic backup to a directory on the C drive. And I'm looking at these backups going back years for all these backups. I think it does a backup once a month. And I'm looking at all these directories. Now, I have another partition that's got like 400 gig available. So for me to just grab 10 gig, and just in case we ever need it, I know we're not, but we don't like deleting things that we're not familiar with. So I just pick that up, move them, all those backups, the 10 gig of space, moved it to a safe area that has tons of space. And now we had a lot of available space on the C drive. Getting 10 gig back when you only have 30, wow, makes a big difference. So now they're safe, at least for the time being. I wanted to mention that because it's one of those utilities that, wow, when you need it, it's awesome. And to be able to get a breakdown of every subdirectory, and you can see the percentage of the hard drive and the size, and you can keep drilling down. Just open up the little plus sign and keep drilling down to where you can get to the actual directory and files that's consuming all the space. I have used that so many times with a new client because that's the biggest problem when you take over a client that has servers. It's space. Two things. One, the previous IT didn't watch it well, or they didn't manage it properly. Or even if they did, it just requires regular care and feeding because maybe there's things out of your control. Like here, a custom application that I had no idea that it was set to back up to the same drive that the program's actually running on. Again, this utility, it's called Tree Size. There's a professional version you can look into. I actually used to own the pro version years ago. Tree Size, and then there's also Tree Size Portable, and you can get that from our favorite portable apps website, which is portableapps.com. Let's get started with questions and emails, and I'm going to kick things off with a question from a client of mine that they moved out of the area, and I hadn't heard from them in, boy, a year or two. And I got an email from her, and of course she's an attorney. She has MacBook Pro running OS X 10.8.4. She is trying to download the add-in to allow her to go to Google Plus Hangout. She has tried every browser and it fails to install. We've tried the security setting change to where she can install anything. No go. No joy. Any tips on how to make that work and why? And that's the only thing that won't install. It's the Google Plus Hangout. So any tips that I can pass on to her and then I'll share with everybody else, I would greatly appreciate that from any of you Mac experts that are listening to the show. First email, and this is from Mickey. Hi, Mike. I would like to start off by saying that servers are not my strong point at all. I have a new contract client that I just took over. Their old IT person up and left without notice, so I am left to deal with the mess. The company has about 30 workstations with a server running Server 2008. The server also has 3 Hyper-V machines running inside it, an Exchange server, Time Clock server, and an accounting server. The server also runs Active Directory DNS and, of course, a DHCP server. The old IT person had charged this company for all the server license and workstation licenses, which I have found out no server license and half the workstation licenses were not legit and were copies from another company he worked for. Oh, this is bad. I have since gotten all the systems updated with legal licenses. He had no backups whatsoever running on the server. When they asked him about the backups, he told them not to worry about it. I have since set up 3 external drives for backup, with 2 are rotated weekly for an offsite backup. I also have been contracted to a sister company that the old IT person took care of, so I know I'll be going through the same issues there starting next month. That company is an identical clone of this one. By the way, that's exactly what happened to me a couple years ago. My first retainer client then passed me on and gave me a great referral of a company was the same IT person. So I knew it was the same IT person that I was replacing. So I knew what to look for. That actually helps you when you know the problems of the previous IT person and then you run into it and you know the same one. You know the mistakes and exactly where they are, and you can just go right for it because they do the same thing to everybody. The main issue I am having is that I cannot get Windows Update to work on any workstation, the main server or the Hyper-V servers. When I took over the contract about 3 months ago, no workstations or server had any updates done since the 1st of the 16th of January 2012. Wow. Which he also charged them for. As a temporary workaround, I have been using WSUS offline. Great. With the systems, it's a royal pain in the butt, and I can't justify billing all that much time every month. You know, please, you should charge for what you're doing, especially in a cleanup process where you're taking over someone that messed up. Don't be afraid to charge for that. The error code I get is 80072EE2. It says an error occurred while checking for new updates for your computer. I don't know if this is a setting in the server so it can push the updates or if it's a DNS issue on the server. I have searched the net for solutions but have not found any. Have you ran into this or do you know what's going on? I am pulling my hair out with this issue and obviously don't want to break something seeing how it would cripple this company. Any help would be greatly appreciated. You know, let's take one workstation. Now, the old IT might have tried to use the WSUS built-in, maybe running on the server to push updates. Here's what I would like you to do. Run the Windows Repair all-in-one tool. There's an option to fix Windows updates. Run that on a workstation where the updates are not working. If that doesn't work, there's the Internet Repair tool that also can fix that. Now remember, if one doesn't work, sometimes the other one does. Try both of them. Links will be in the show notes. And then see if that will allow the updates to work. Now, there's also a fix that you can try going to Microsoft.com/fixit. Look for the fixit for the updates, and that sometimes helps. You got a couple things to try here. Now, if that works, go forth and run that on all of the workstations, and then you got the updates at least going online. Now, the more difficult repair will be the server, and you got to make sure you have a full backup of that server. And then I think the problem is DNS. I want you to make sure that the Active Directory integrated DNS on the domain controller is set up properly. And one of the things, I know you're not experienced with servers. This is where I will offer my services to help you, and you can contact me, my consulting email address, and any of you can, for any kind of help outside of the Mike Tech Show arena. It's Mike@MHSConsulting, all one word, MHSConsulting.net. Send me an email, and you know what? Even if you don't remember that, and you send it to Mike Tech Show and say, hey, Mike, I want this to be billable. This is something I want you to help me with. I will be glad to help you with that repair. That repair, I can actually help you with remotely on the server. And you can actually Google this and get the solution to make sure, A, the version of the operating system that you're running at the server, and how to check to make sure that the DNS is set correctly. Ken and I, in our past life in the corporate world, always had an expression, when in doubt, check DNS. It's always going to be DNS that's going to be the culprit of a lot of your issues. And you want to make sure that that is, in fact, correctly configured. That may be the root of all of the issues here with the Windows updates not working. But we don't want to impact the server right now, and we want to get you on track with the workstation. So definitely give all these fixes a try on the workstation. Let me know how you make out. Let me know if you need assistance with the server and the setup. Great story. Hopefully you got everything under control. This is from Jeff, and the subject, mobile device management. Mike, I thought I would contribute a suggestion to your show. I use Maracai Systems Manager for mobile device management at my shop. Maracai was just bought by Cisco for about $1 billion. I got turned on to this because I registered for a Maracai seminar and got a free M12 access point. I'll get you my review on. The Systems Manager application, which is free, gives you everything that you need from a mobile device management solution. Encryption, stolen device tracking, mobile profiles, and such. One of the most useful features is that you can manage iPhones and Android devices and push things like an updated Wi-Fi password for a certain company SSID. iPhones need a company cert, which you can generate free from Maracai to get the extended management features. With Android devices, you can do everything from send system messages to sending intents, which means you can trigger actions on the OS, like opening web browsers by sending a command from the cloud-based console. There are a lot of possibilities with this, and you can also have managed mobile applications with the backpack feature. The feature set is so rich, I can't begin to go over all the things here in the email. I will say that the System Manager application also works for monitoring PCs and laptops so that you can do asset management. So this means that you can manage all of your devices from this cloud-based system. The M12 access point. Here's my review. I got this device and it took me 15 minutes to set up and start using. I was able to set up multiple SIDs with guest networks without the need for guest VLANs at all. The separation is done on the access point, and you can also set your own layer 3 rule and layer 7 filtering as well. This means that you can decide which SSID has access and the internal LAN and how much access they have. It works with my Radius server. I have set up 802.1x for corporate laptops using Wi-Fi. The setup was seamless, as for the M12 working with server 2008 R2 NPS. I don't have to worry about WPA2 pre-shared keys being given away. However, you still need to know how to set it up on the server side. Here is the only downside. You get a 3-year enterprise license along with the free access point that you don't pay for until it expires. Merakai offers cloud-based switching and firewalls as well. Their licensing is expensive. However, the ease of management and setup is hard to argue with. Important things to note about Merakai: this is a cloud-based wireless controller that you use when managing their devices. You can decide how the devices act when they lose connectivity with the cloud-based controller. The devices would be able to still service networks based on their current configurations. However, you won't be able to get firmware updates or make configuration changes until the connection to Merakai systems comes back. Conversely, you could also decide to configure them to be completely crippled when connections to Merakai are severed for one reason or another. I absolutely endorse your show whenever I can, and I have some server questions for you that I will send in another email. I'd love to tell you about my experiences migrating an SBS 2003 environment to 2008 R2. Standard VMware hypervisor-based one, and get your feedback on some decisions that I made. Absolutely. Please share them. I know you have done a similar operation as well and would like to share some notes on it. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you for taking the time to review that service. I'm going to look up the what the URL is for the Merakai, and I will put it in the show notes. We've had a couple listeners inquire about managing mobile devices and what services and recommendations. So thank you for taking the time to put that together. Here's a quick question, and this is from Wayne. As an everyday user, I enjoy your show and many things that are discussed. I heard you talk about CombiFix and wanted to know if I can just to check my computer to see if anything is found. The write-up states to be careful. Yes. See, CombiFix deletes things, and what if it finds some things that are critical to your system that it interprets as a virus or an infection, and it's not, and it can make your system unstable. That's why I always recommend running CombiFix when you absolutely know your system is infected. Now, if you want to just play and learn, make sure you have a full backup. I would make sure that you have a system image of your computer before you run CombiFix. Then run it just for the experience to see what the options are. But to just run it just to see if you have something wrong, I wouldn't do it. To learn, yes, so long as you can recover. Thanks for the question. Hope that helps you. This is from Gordon. Question for you. I am trying to find a power switch for a compact Presario S0000, and I am not having any luck. I have tried searching the web. Do you by chance know of a hidden treasure of a site for getting said parts? This system belongs to a disabled Navy vet. I'd like to get it back to him without having to replace the whole machine due to a simple power switch. Thanks, Gordon. I recommend it. Look at eBay. I mean, that's obvious to go to eBay. Are there any hidden treasures of sites that we're not aware of that has hard-to-get parts? And that's why I'm reading this question for everybody, to stimulate emails that are those sites that we don't know about that are reputable, that are you can trust, that have hard-to-get parts from old computers so we can keep them running for people who just have to have those old systems. They can't afford a new computer. You can send them to me, and then I will share them. Hey, Mike, it's Craig here, and this is IOC Craig in the chat. And I have a tale from the trenches story for you. I've been working on a client Windows Vista laptop over this past weekend. 18 hours worth of work, in fact. This laptop was infiltrated with over 140 malicious website redirectors, viruses, and other malware programs. my client was not using a hardware firewall router on the network, and of course denied they did anything that would cause this. Additionally, there were 4 antivirus programs installed. McAfee was one that got installed due to an Adobe update, at least 6 browser toolbars, and quite a few other programs that were malicious. Naturally, I started by removing the malicious infections using TDSS Killer, ADW Cleaner, RKill, ERA Remover, CombiFix, Malwarebytes, and Hitman Pro. Then I installed the free version of Avast antivirus, and that caught 27 other malicious programs trying to access the internet. As I was performing this laptop cleanout using Revo Uninstaller, I discovered a very nasty program I'd never heard of called Bonjour. Bonjour is an Apple communication service. It's not bad. Surprisingly, it was created by Apple for Mac OS X, and it is tied to various Apple products, but can be used on Windows. Yes, from my understanding, it is a zero configuration network application. Well, I was successfully able to remove Bonjour, but after the reboot, there were many unforeseen consequences. Yes, Bonjour is not bad. When you come across that on someone's system, they were communicating using an Apple product, using that protocol to communicate to it, leave it. What I didn't know about Bonjour is that removing it absolutely destroyed the TCP/IP stack and WinSock. It disabled Event Viewer and other services associated with networking in Windows. It also removes wireless LAN devices from the computer and essentially cripples any chances of connecting to the internet. I had researched fixes to see if I could cripple Bonjour and prevent the results as I mentioned above. I tried a reg hack, brute force uninstalling, deleting all registry keys associated with Bonjour, and removing all traces of the program on the C drive. Most of the tricks out there did nothing and were all pretty worthless in my opinion. So after many failed attempts at removing Bonjour, I came to the conclusion that since the infections were gone, the junkware was removed, and that my client laptop can connect to the internet with that app installed, I left Bonjour on the system. Yes, leave it. I did one more full scan with Avast, and it recommended a boot scan where it found additional infections, and finally ran Malwarebytes full scan once more, came back clean. Mike, to me, Bonjour acts very similar to a rootkit virus, considering how many tentacles this program entangled with once installed in Windows. It is shocking that Apple would invent something like this that would hurt Windows users. It's really not hurting Windows. It's a protocol to help you communicate with Apple devices. I've been a computer tech since 1999, and I've never seen a reputable company's product do something like this before. Hopefully, this was not too long of a story for you. Take care, Mike. Your knowledge and experience has really helped me grow as a technician. I also include Carrie in that as well. Thank you, Craig. Thank you. And it's just, I guess it's because I'm familiar with that because of my support and working with so many different Apple products and the different Macs and iPhones and iPads and printers that need to talk via Bonjour to the Apple products and the community. Yes, it's invented by Apple. Yes, it attaches itself and deep roots itself into the networking stack, but it's not bad. It's not doing anything wrong. It's almost like TCP/IP. It's just another protocol. Clearly, there was something installed that installed Bonjour. For anybody out there working with it, when you see that, that's one of those ones, now you can just leave it. This is from Jorge. This is about Laplink's PC Mover program. Hi, Mike. On your last show, you talked about migrating applications from an XP computer to a new Windows 7 computer. I use Laplink PC Mover for those types of projects. It handles user data, programs. It simply makes your job a lot easier. And there is no need to search for old installation disks. I've used this utility many times, and it's been a good, reliable friend. They offer free tech support during the migration process. Just avoid the updates and all those programs that by default are set to be installed during the migration. Hope this helps. Jorge, yes, I remember talking about, I thought that program went away, Laplink's PC Mover. I will look into that. When you run into that problem that I did with a client, that you get that application, that odd app, that you don't have the original CDs or the original discs, and you need to migrate it. I'm always worried going from XP to Windows 7 that it's a totally different application that you need. And I'm worried, I really just want to preserve the data, see if they have a new download for the Windows 7, and then migrate the data. But this is actually a really good tip, and it's something that I got to remember to use this when I'm doing migrations. And, you know, we're going to be doing a lot of migrations this summer and the beginning of the year because Windows XP goes away April 2014. So there's going to be lots and lots of migrations out there that we're all going to be doing, going from XP to Windows 7. And I would say this Laplink PC Mover combined with Fab's Auto Backup for Tech, you're in a good position for moving everything. This is Jason, and Jason recommends the following. I want to bring to you and your listeners' attention about a Windows 8 Wi-Fi security risk. Orphaned open auto-connecting Wi-Fi network profiles will automatically connect when in range any SID of the same name. For example, if you connect to open ODOBA free Wi-Fi network at ODOBAS restaurant, and then later that day you go to the airport and some malicious person broadcasts ODOBA free Wi-Fi, your computer will auto-connect and there is nothing you can do about it until after the fact. Now they can capture all your network traffic and potentially any plain text passwords that you may be sending. All right, the solution is a command line utility that displays and allows you to delete auto-connected open Wi-Fi profiles. So I'm going to have a link to that. Jason, thanks for bringing that to our attention. What a terrible malicious thing to do, where you know famous connections or Wi-Fi or maybe a Starbucks name or something for a traditional normally Wi-Fi for that particular place, and then setting up in a very generic area a hotspot with that and then doing something bad. That's something I wouldn't have thought of. Thank you for arming us. This is from David. Putting clients out of business. Ooh, that doesn't sound good, right? During the last couple of shows, you've talked about a router that you need access to. You can't reset it because you'll shut down your client while you're working to reconfigure it. I face that situation regularly. I need to do something on a client's network that will temporarily but significantly disable their access to critical resources. Because of that, I do a lot of work after hours work. I do that too. But there's still another point here that's being missed. My clients who close in the evenings have given me keys that I can use to get into the space where I need to work. I'm never afraid to ask for keys because they, too, are necessary tools for our business. I just make sure to point out that I'm bonded and insured. By the way, I have a area where I have all the keys and card codes for all my retainer clients. I have off-hour access for exactly this reason. The client in question technically is not a retainer client under contract as of this moment. And even though I'm doing a lot of work, we're getting everything stabilized and then the retainer contract's happening. Another problem is, even though I'm off hours getting this set, it does not give me the settings that I can't see. I still could miss something that could break something when business hours start again. So you see where the problem is. It's a little more complicated than just being able to work on this offline, reset it to the factory defaults, and away we go. I don't know what I don't know. Are there custom configs in this router for their day-to-day operations that I could be missing? I don't think so, but I'm not taking the chance right now. My willingness to work after hours has gotten me a lot of work, and me too. That's where I do all my updates, all my monitoring, all my any patching, any fixes. As a matter of fact, I think I spend more time all after hours doing work than I do during the day for clients. It also allows me to perform more services for my clients. None of them have qualified network administrators on their staffs, and they are always relieved to have someone who is qualified and reliable to keep their system secure and working. While I do a lot of that work remotely through secure VPN connections, having keys allows me to do those jobs that can only be done outside of a client's primary business hours. I've even given people huge discounts on hardware and software for good firewalls and VPNs, even though I might have to pay full price, because it always pays off in the end. I have become my client's network administrator, and it pays off very well. David, you and I are very alike in the way we approach our business. Besides, sometimes the only solution to a problem is to reset the gosh darn box. David, thank you very much. And he's Evening Star Information Services, and he is based in New Mexico. Thank you very much for that. I also take that approach with my clients, all my retainer clients. I have access to their facility off hours because sometimes I'm rebooting a system or doing something. I know when they need remote access or not, so I know when I can get in there and can do work. Very important, like this Tuesday night, the window that I had to be able to set up that connector for testing the encrypted email. That's a great example. I did that in a window in between two different backups and at a time where I knew nobody was accessing anything, so I could test and make sure everything was working properly. That is very important. Everything that you stated here in your email, heed to this, everybody. That's very important as part of your services to support your client. This is from Steve. Hello, Mike. Love the shows you do. I have a computer business specializing in small businesses, almost 30 years experience in the PC business. Regarding your email encryption project, have you considered Trend Micro's product? No, I have not, and I am going to look into it. Easy to set up and has an Outlook plugin. Can use the web services delivery to other clients. I'm testing it now and have a few customers interested. Just a thought. Steve, please follow up with an in-depth review of that product. Take a moment, maybe record it with Audacity on your computer and send me the MP3 file. Or dial in to my Skype phone number and leave me a message with it. Or if you don't feel like that and you just want to write it out, do that longhand, and I would very much like your review of that product and service for the encryption email so we can offer that as an alternative, and I will absolutely get that on the air right away. Final email, and it's a Shadow Protect Cloud question. Hey, Mike, I know you're a big supporter of Shadow Protect, but do you have any experience with the new cloud service? I'm looking at them as a local and cloud backup solution for a small place with 12 physical servers and about 15 virtual servers, currently an Exchange server, a couple of Synology, 40 terabyte rack systems, and about 40 desktops, plus a varying amount of virtual desktop systems that aren't really in the production side of things. Any advice would be appreciated. And this is from Kevin. Kevin, I have no experience with Shadow Protect Cloud Services, but I am going to reach out to Winston Wolf and get his take on that and review, because he is an expert with Shadow Protect and all of their products. And I don't know if he has any clients currently using the Shadow Protect service, but if there's anybody in the world that is using it, it would be him. So I'm going to reach out to Winston this weekend and get you an answer and some feedback on that. And Winston, if you hear this before I get to you, if you can take a moment and kick me off your opinion of that cloud service, and I'll read it on the next show. That is it. If you shop from Amazon or know anyone that is shopping from Amazon, use my link, amazon.mikenation.net. There you will be able to get the same price, but it helps support the Mike Tech Show. And a little bit comes back as a commission, and it makes a big difference. And I want to thank everybody for continuing to use that link. And it's a great way to support the show. Bookmark that and share it. I really appreciate it. That's it for tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you got something out of it. Send me your emails, your voicemails, and your feedback, and I will get it into a future show. I want to thank you for downloading and staying subscribed. That's it. I'll talk to you next week. Have a great weekend and a great week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.